Orb, Volume 2, Number 8. Denial. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. A couple of episodes back, I spoke of obedience. As I was preparing that episode, I thought about whether people have authority over our machines. Do our machines obey us? I left it out at the time, and am now coming back to it with a rather sideways approach. We love our new gadgets. We're continually saying, "Gotta get me some of that." We deny the risks of our new gadgets. We hear them, and we say, "We've got to stop that," but we don't do much of anything. We quickly forget the story. It's happening somewhere far away, out of sight, out of mind. Denial is our way to cope with the things we don't think we can control. So when did the world we are making get out of our hands? The train. The world rides upon the train into the future. Ye scientists draw the map and cleareth the territory. Ye technologists layeth the tracks. The train roars downeth the tracks, without care for its speed, for the engine of the train is money. The drivers of the train are asleep. The prophecy. Ahead, in the valley of our future, lies the gray goo. The gray goo consumes all without prejudice. Ye scientists perceive the gray goo, but they care for it not. They only map the territory. Ye technologists perceive the gray goo, but the train is coming, and they must lay the tracks. The valley is the fastest route to the future. The engine has no eyes. The drivers are asleep. That might be called the Goo Train Manifesto. What is the gray goo? For that, we need to look into the world of nanotechnology, the realm of stuff at the atomic scale. Imagine little nanobots, devices built at the atomic level, that can self-assemble. After all, making billions, trillions of them would be tedious. Imagine, too, that these self-assembling nanobots have to acquire the raw materials by taking apart the other stuff around them. There you go. You're on your way to the gray goo. No container could contain them. They'd just take it apart for the materials to self-replicate. They self-replicate so the destruction of the planet accelerates until it's all just gray goo. Ah, but people would never let that happen. We would never be so stupid as to create self-assembling nanobots. Really? You think we're that bright? Now, I'm not supposing this happens in one big leap of technical wizardry. That's not how it happens. Consider this quote. A technological advance that appears not to threaten freedom often turns out to threaten it very seriously later on. For example, consider motorized transport. A walking man formerly could go where he pleased, go at his own pace without technological support systems. When motor vehicles were introduced, they appeared to increase man's freedom. They took no freedom away from the walking man. No one had to have an automobile if he didn't want one. And anyone who did choose to buy an automobile could travel much faster than the walking man. But the introduction of motorized transport soon changed society in such a way as to restrict greatly man's freedom of locomotion. In a car, especially in densely populated areas, one cannot just go where one likes at one's own pace. One's movement is governed by the flow of traffic and by various traffic laws. One is tied down by various obligations, license requirements, driver's tests, renewing registration, insurance, maintenance required for safety. Moreover, the use of motorized transport is no longer optional. Since the introduction of motorized transport, the arrangement of our cities has changed in such a way that the majority of people no longer live within walking distance of their place of employment, shopping areas, and recreational opportunities, so that they have to depend on the automobile for transportation. Or else they must use public transportation, in which case they have even less control over their own movement than when driving a car. Even the walker's freedom is now greatly restricted. In the city, he continually has to stop and wait for traffic lights that are designed mainly to serve auto traffic. In the country, motor traffic makes it dangerous and unpleasant to walk along the highway. Note the important point we have illustrated with the case of motorized transport. when a new item of technology is introduced as an option that an individual can accept or not as he chooses, it does not necessarily remain optional. In many cases, the new technology changes society in such a way that people eventually find themselves forced to use it. While technological progress as a whole continually narrows our sphere of freedom, each new technical advance considered by itself appears to be desirable. Electricity, indoor plumbing, rapid long-distance communications, how could one argue against any of these things? Yet all these technical advances taken together have created a world in which the average man's fate is no longer in his own hands, or in the hands of his neighbors and friends, but in those of politicians, corporate executives, and remote anonymous technicians and bureaucrats whom he, as an individual, has no power to influence. The same process will continue in the future. Take genetic engineering, for example. Few people will resist the introduction of a genetic technique that eliminates a hereditary disease. It does no apparent harm and prevents much suffering. Yet a large number of genetic improvements taken together will make the human being into an engineered product. Genetic engineering enables us to create life, like ourselves, only better or worse. Last episode, I spoke of loving others regardless of their state or station in life. If we were to engineer alphas and epsilons, a la Brave New Worlds, would we consider one the equal of the other? Perhaps closer to home, closer to current capability, consider genetic engineering in plants. Traditional agronomy transfers genes between plants whose kinship lets them interbreed. The new botany mechanically transfers genes between organisms that can never mate naturally. An antifreeze gene from a fish becomes part of a strawberry. Engineering implies understanding of the causal mechanisms that link actions to effects, but nobody understands the mechanisms by which genes, interacting with each other and the environment, express traits. Transgenic manipulation inserts foreign genes into random locations in a plant's DNA to see what happens. That's not engineering. It's the industrialization of life by people with a narrow understanding of it. The results, too, are more worrisome than those of mere mechanical tinkering, because unlike mechanical contrivances, genetically modified organisms reproduce, genes spread, and mistakes literally take on a life of their own. Herbicide-resistance genes can escape and make super weeds. Insecticide-making genes can kill beyond their intended targets. Both these problems have already occurred and continue to impact the ecology. Gene-spliced Bt insecticide in corn pollen, intended to target corn borers, kills monarch butterflies. That insecticide, unlike its natural forebear, can build up in soil. And corn borers' resistance to it is apparently a dominant trait. It could get worse. Division into species seems to be nature's way of keeping pathogens in a box where they behave properly. They learn that it's a bad strategy to kill your host. Transgenics may let pathogens vault the species barrier and enter new realms where they have no idea how to behave. It's so hard to eradicate an unwanted wild gene that we've intentionally done it only once, with the smallpox virus. Even then, we couldn't quite bring ourselves to make it extinct. We safely store it in a few places. Theologian Jennifer Cobb said, "For the first time, cutting-edge research is taking place within corporations rather than research labs. Many of the technological advances are therefore being driven by the potential for profit, rather than lofty issues like ethics. It's much more about building a company that can go IPO as fast as possible," she said, noting a gold rush mentality that produces a very short-term view of the world.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. Listen to yourself, churn world, serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up, a knock, speak, grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down, high. Wire and a fire representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, baffle Trump, tethered crop. Look at that, no plane, fine, then, uh-oh, overflow. Population, common food.
torn tar, slice and burn, return. Listen to yourself churn. Locking in uniform and book burning, blood letting every motive escalate. Automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motive. Step down, step down. Watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steering clear. A tournament, a tournament, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world.
Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, neck, right?
The existing market structure has worked pretty well so far and hasn't led to any major concerns. It seems premature to walk away from it. Those are the words of Ralph Merkel, a nanotechnology expert. Relinquishment is not possible and foolish if you consider the possibility of other countries developing the technology. Oh, those others. If we don't build it, the Reds will get it first. The Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies lists over 1,300 products reported by their manufacturers to contain nanoparticles, including nonstick cookware, fabric softeners, children's plush toys, and even some foods and beverages. Silver nanoparticles are added to many consumer products as an antimicrobial agent, including many brands of odor-resistant socks and t-shirts. Virginia Walker, a Queen's University biologist, said that people should consider how they use nanoparticles. She did a study that added silver nanoparticles to soil from the high Arctic, far from human settlements, and found reduced populations of many species of bacteria. It also makes one beneficial species disappear altogether. The researchers were concerned about the disappearance of this specific bacterium because it is a nitrogen-fixing species. That is, it makes the nutrient nitrogen available in a form that plants can use. So which would you rather have? Socks that don't stink, or soil in which plants can actually grow? Well, I wear socks. I don't grow things. Really, people, we have to wake up and make choices to take a wider view of our world, and we need corporations to do it too. Our knowledge of science is really pretty brief. Our existence on the planet has been pretty brief. Consider our knowledge of plate tectonics. Alfred Wegener presented his theory of continental drift to the German Geological Society on January 6, 1912. He was generally dismissed, as he had no idea how the continents could have drifted apart from Pangaea. It wasn't widely accepted until Jack Oliver published Seismology and the New Global Tectonics in 1968. That's in my lifetime. If you imagine the life of planet Earth as extending the length of your arm from shoulder to fingertip, the entirety of human history could be swept away with a single stroke of a nail file. That is all of human history. We just learned about plate tectonics in my lifetime. I'm in no hurry to get to the future. Others, well, they can't wait. Unbounding the future, the nanotechnology revolution, imagines some of the changes that might take place in a world where we had molecular-level assemblers. Assemblers could make possible incredibly low-cost solar power, cures for cancer and the common cold by augmentation of the human immune system, essentially complete cleanup of the environment. An immediate consequence of the Faustian bargain in obtaining the great power of nanotechnology is that we run a grave risk, the risk that we might destroy the biosphere on which all life depends. Tough, omnivorous bacteria could outcompete real bacteria. They could spread like blowing pollen, replicate swiftly, and reduce the biosphere to dust in a matter of days. We have trouble enough controlling viruses and fruit flies. Gray goo would surely be a depressing ending to our human adventure on Earth, far worse than mere fire or ice, and one that could stem from a simple laboratory accident. Oops. There is no profit in publicizing the dangers. We deny them instead. The philosopher John Leslie has studied this question and concluded that the risk of human extinction is at least 30%, while Ray Kurzweil believes we have a better than even chance of making it through, with the caveat that he has always been accused of being an optimist. Aristotle opened his Metaphysics with the simple statement, "All men by nature desire to know." The Pandora's boxes of genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics are almost open. Yet we seem hardly to have noticed. Ideas can't be put back in a box, unlike uranium or plutonium. They don't need to be mined and refined, and they can be freely copied. Once they are out, they are out. In May of 1978, a Northwestern University materials engineering professor, Buckley Crist, received a package in the post that was being returned to him. He had not sent it. This was the first of many mail bombs sent to university and airline staff over the next 17 years by what became known as the Unabomber. In 1995, the Unabomber offered to end his attacks if a major paper would publish his 35,000-word essay, Industrial Society and Its Future. After much hand-wringing, give in to terrorism or risk additional attacks, the New York Times and the Washington Post printed it on September 19th. As it turns out, this led relatives to finger the culprit and eventually sent Ted Kaczynski to prison. It is his manifesto that is of interest here. I quoted it at the beginning of this episode. He writes about the power of technology to take over human freedoms. Our lives depend on decisions made by other people. We have no control over these decisions, and usually we do not even know the people who make them. Our lives depend on whether safety standards at a nuclear power plant are properly maintained, on how much pesticide is allowed to get into our food, or how much pollution into our air, on how skillful or incompetent our doctor is. Primitive man, threatened by a fierce animal or by hunger, can fight in self-defense or travel in search of food. He has no certainty of success in these efforts, but he is by no means helpless against the things that threaten him. The modern individual, on the other hand, is threatened by many things against which he is helpless: nuclear accidents, carcinogens in food, environmental pollution, war. Threats to the modern individual tend to be man-made. They are not the threats of chance, but are imposed on him by other persons whose decisions he, as an individual, is unable to influence. Technicians tend to be so involved in their work that when a conflict arises between their technical work and freedom, they almost always decide in favor of their technical work. Educators, humanitarian groups, conservation organizations do not hesitate to use propaganda and other psychological techniques to help them achieve their laudable ends. Corporations and government agencies do not hesitate to collect information about individuals without regard to their privacy. Law enforcement agencies do whatever they can, sometimes illegally, to restrict or circumvent constitutional rights. Most of these educators, government officials, and law officers believe in freedom, privacy, and constitutional rights. But when these conflict with their work, they usually feel that their work is more important. Ye scientists perceive the gray goo, but they care for it not. They only map the territory. Ye technologists perceive the gray goo, but the train is coming, and they must lay the tracks. Our use of mass entertainment is optional. No law requires us to watch television, listen to radio, read magazines. Yet mass entertainment is a means of escape and stress reduction on which most of us have become dependent. Everyone complains about the trashiness of television, but almost everyone watches it. Yet until quite recently in human history, most people got along very nicely with no other entertainment than that which the local community created for itself. It might be argued that the human race would never be foolish enough to hand over all the power to the machines. But we are not suggesting, neither that the human race would voluntarily turn power over to the machines, nor that the machines will willfully seize power. What we do suggest is that the human race might easily permit itself to drift into a position of such dependence on the machines that it would have no practical choice but to accept all of the machines' decisions. At that stage, the machines will be in effective control. Turning them off would amount to suicide. Some nanotechnology researchers are predicting the coming of something called utility fog, a cloud made up of microscopic nanobots that can link together to form solid materials. The nanobots, or foglets as they've been called, could then collectively project sound and images, effectively creating three-dimensional virtual reality. I'll interject here to say that this reality is not virtual. There really is a physical thing there, just not exactly the thing you perceive it to be. The technology exists today to build a foglet, but it would still be too big and expensive to use effectively. It will take researchers another decade or two to develop the capability to manufacture foglets cheaply enough for there to be any real-world application. People will start living in utility fog because of its reconfigurable nature. It will be able to reshape a person's home into anything they desire. Is this our future? The prophecy. Ahead in the valley of our future lies the gray goo. The gray goo consumes all without prejudice. Ye scientists perceive the gray goo, but they care for it not. They only map the territory. Ye technologists perceive the gray goo, but the train is coming, and they must lay the tracks. The valley is the fastest route to the future. The engine has no eyes. The drivers are asleep. A bomb can blow up only once, but one nanobot, a spliced gene, can become many and quickly get out of control. Our key choices now are not between unwelcome alternatives, nuclear power or freezing in the dark, transgenic crops or starvation, but between those bad choices and attractive ones outside the orthodoxy. For crops, the best choice would be fairer distribution of food grown by a respectful and biologically informed agriculture that stops treating soil like dirt. But sound choices tend to emerge and get adopted in time only if we take seriously the wisdom of informed democracy. Bill Joy said, "The only thing in our favor is that this is in the future. But then, we're not very good about reacting to something that hasn't happened yet." The Orb operates exclusively on listener support. Please visit us at orbcast.ca and join in. There is a discussion forum and other premium content for members. If you have a topic you would like The Orb to focus on, please send an email to suggestions@orbcast.ca. You can write to me at host@orbcast.ca. I'm Reed Hart.